It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood.
I shall impersonate a man. Come, enter into my imagination and see him.
In the play Man of La Mancha, the gallant knight takes on the world with an idealism bordering on madness.
To become a knight errant and sally forth into the world righting all wrongs. His name, Don Quixote de La Mancha.
But Don Quixote's visions are delusional. With his lance, the noble knight charges what he believes are evil giants, paying no heed to the warnings of his manservant, Sancho Panza, that he is really attacking windmills.
And the wild winds of fortune shall carry me onward, or whithersoever they blow. Whithersoever they blow.
Today's crusaders against wind power aren't tilting at imaginary giants. They oppose real ones. Consider Hyannis, Massachusetts, on the southern coast of Cape Cod, near the Kennedy family compound. The company Cape Wind wants to build the nation's first offshore wind farm, 7 miles off the coast of Hyannis on Horseneck Shoal in Nantucket Sound. The $700 million project calls for the construction of 130 turbines, each taller than the Statue of Liberty. The turbines would be within eyesight of the town and popular beach communities on Nantucket Island and Martha's Vineyard. As part of the environmental review process, supporters and opponents of the project have been attending public meetings, giving voice and even song to their points of view.
How many windmills will it take to replace resources that leave the world unstable?
Cape Wind won't prevent climate change by itself, but it will offset nearly 1 million tons of carbon dioxide, making this the single most beneficial action we can take to clean our air and reduce our greenhouse gas emissions.
I oppose the idea of America's first offshore wind farm being placed in Nantucket Sound. My opposition is based on my opinion that this unspoiled area should not be squandered and disfigured.
If somebody's view was disturbed, I'm sorry. I really am. But the greater good is stewardship of the planet.
Yes, and how many particulates must fill our lungs before a clean source can be found?
I am not opposed to alternate energy sources, but at what expense? We have a very unique environment in the Sound and a very unique way of getting power, and I don't know how we can marry the two.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
So far, it's been a seesaw battle over the Cape Wind project. Federal courts have ruled in favor of the plan, but in March of 2005, the Department of Interior called a draft impact statement flawed, setting the project back by as many as 2 years, or maybe forever. On a cold, rainy, early spring day along the Hyannis waterfront, I spoke with Jim Gordon, president of Cape Wind, the project developer, and Susan Nickerson, executive director of the Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound, the leading opposition group to the wind farm. We met as fishermen unloaded their haul at the nearby dock.
So I want to thank you both for coming out here on kind of a blustery, cold day.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for inviting us.
So, Jim, let's start with you. Now, if you get permission to build your wind farm, how would it operate on, well, this is a somewhat windy day today?
Well, Steve, the winds off of Horseshoe Shoal average about 19 miles per hour. The reason that we picked Horseshoe Shoal is that it has some of the strongest, most consistent winds. It has shallow waters and low wave heights. And we found that Horseshoe Shoal was the optimal site, and the fact that it was close to the Cape and Islands, which has the fastest growing electric demand in New England. So here we're going to put a wind farm that's going to produce, on average, 75% of the Cape and Islands electricity with zero pollutant emissions, zero water consumption, and zero waste discharge.
Why not go further offshore?
Because right now the technology, Steve, doesn't allow you to build offshore wind turbines in very deep waters. Also, you know, the further out you go, the greater the losses are on the electricity, so it's less efficient. So that we looked at a number of the successful wind farms, offshore wind farms in Europe, And what we are trying to do is build a wind farm where the wind is, where the conditions are right so that it's technically and economically feasible to supply Massachusetts citizens with, you know, lower electric costs, increased energy independence, a cleaner, healthier environment, and new jobs.
What would these turbines look like from shore?
We're actually about 6 miles from Horseshoe Shoal now, and if you were on the nearest public beaches and looked out on the horizon, the wind turbines on a clear day would appear about a half inch off the horizon. They would look like tiny sailing masts. So what you're looking at here, these boat masts tower over a half inch view off the horizon.
Well, Susan Nickerson, you're with the Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound, and you oppose the Cape Wind Project. Why?
Steve, there are a number of reasons, and I'd like to get into them. But first, I'd like to emphasize that this is not an argument about the need for renewable energy. And I think people on all sides of the debate agree, without qualification, that the country needs to move in the direction of renewables. The questions that we really face here have to do with where do you put these kind of facilities and what are the trade-offs that people are willing to live with? It turns out that Horseshoe Shoal is about the worst location on the eastern seaboard imaginable because of the existing uses out there. And the fishing boats, the one that was just here at the dock unloading scallops, very likely got that catch on Horseshoe Shoal. We have fishermen that have stood beside us for many months and years now and have attested to the value of the catch. Millions of dollars worth of fish each year they take off of Horseshoe Shoal. It's not necessarily deep sea fishing. It's squid, it's scup, it's shellfish. And if the turbines are built out there, they won't use the area because they will not be able to maneuver their boats in between the turbines. They'll be concerned about their gear interlocking with the cables that will be connecting each of the wind turbine generators together. That's one example of the conflicts.
So what are your concerns on a national level here?
That's a very important piece of this because essentially national energy policy is being formulated right here in Nantucket Sound. And what happens here will have implications up and down the eastern seaboard, the Gulf of Mexico, and the west coast. What has happened with Cape Wind, they've exposed an enormous gaping hole in federal law. There is no federal law governing how the Outer Continental Shelf can or cannot be used. And if this permit were to be granted to allow Cape Wind to build on public land for private gain, it would essentially trigger Gold Rush. And other coastal states that right now have no more weight than the state of Massachusetts in saying what happens in federal waters off their coasts would be affected.
Now, Sue Nickerson, let me ask you about some of the other environmental groups. I'm thinking of Greenpeace, Conservation Law Foundation, Union of Concerned Scientists have, I think it's fair to say, conditionally said that this project makes some sense to them. I think they have concerns about regulations and such. But at the end of the day, they say, look, this climate change thing is not getting any better. It's a matter of trading off. There's no perfect solution. And this is better than, you know, having all of Cape Cod under a risen sea in however many years is predicted. So what about the dissent among environmental groups about this?
Right, Stephen, that's one of the real tragedies of this whole debate is it's pitting environmentalists against environmentalists, and it is taking two very worthy goals, one of which is development of renewable energy, and pitting it against ocean resource management to no avail. And that's why we think that there is a better way to do this, and that there are win-win scenarios out there. This doesn't happen to be one of them.
Win-win?
Win-win-win, not
win-win. But not
win-win.
Okay, not win-win.
Not win-win. Win-win. Well, it might be win-win.
So what would be a win-win here?
Well, the problem with this project, as we've talked about, is that it's not appropriately sited. It's not the right project in the right place. And we think that with the momentum that's developing around interest in renewables right now, that there can be a consensus approach to this project that would identify a reasonable site. In terms of how we reach that consensus, I think that conversation needs to start with the public. The problem with this project is that it's been developer-driven. The Cape Wind did the computer analysis and found that this was the most lucrative site for their corporate profits, and it happens to be in the middle of Nantucket Sound. We think if the public were behind selection of these sites, Nantucket Sound would never be on the table for discussion, because it is a national treasure and there are existing uses of the area.
Basically, what you're hearing from Susan is she tells you she likes renewable energy, but not just here. Put it somewhere else. The problem is somewhere else is in someone else's viewshed, is in someone else's recreational area. And we all have to ante up in the fight against global warming. You know, there's an environmental justice issue here because, you know, it's interesting. Here we have the fastest growing electric demand in New England, and we're talking about generating a new source of electricity with minimal impacts. And it's not a choice between Cape Wind or nothing. It's a choice between Cape Wind on Horseshoe Shoal or putting a coal plant in Lynn, Massachusetts, or an oil plant in Roxbury, Massachusetts, or, you know, something in a less politically influential or affluent area. And renewable energy is a public purpose in Massachusetts. The legislature is mandating that we get increasing amounts of our energy from renewable energy over the ensuing years. And if we don't build projects like Cape Wind, we're not going to meet that renewable portfolio standard and mandate.
So Nickerson, if this were a public project, if no one was going to make a dollar for a private pocket, this was done by a public agency, would it be okay to put wind turbines out in Nantucket Sound?
If there were all of the environmental factors were considered and the economic factors were considered, and it came out that there was no adverse economic impact, there was no adverse environmental impact, then any site would be acceptable. But the fact of the matter is that we don't have any standards, we don't have any yardsticks, and the folks from Cape Wind like to talk about the project in terms of a panacea, that it's going to cure the asthma epidemic, that it's going to decrease global warming. That's entirely false when you look at what's really going on here. The contribution that this project is going to make in those directions is minuscule, and the costs that are going to be incurred because of it are enormous. And the problem with the Cape Wind project is that it's so controversial, it's basically mired the development of an entire new energy industry in this country, being offshore wind energy development, that ought not be mired. It needs to move ahead.
Well, thank you both for taking this time. Jim Gordon is the CEO of Cape Wind. Susan Nickerson is Executive Director of the Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Catching the wind means more than putting it to work. 3,000 years ago, the Chinese built some of the earliest kites out of bamboo and silk. Of course, kites are still a thrill for kids and some adults, too, like Don McCaslin, who's taking his kite in new directions.
We are at Carson Beach in South Boston, and right now we are rigging kites to get ready to go buggy kiting. I've been buggy kiting since the early 1990s. Fastest I've ever gone is 42. I know many people who like to cruise in the 40 to 50 mile per hour range, but that's a bit fast for my tastes. The wind is faster than I expected, actually. They were saying a sea breeze would kick in, but I thought it would be later this afternoon. It's quite good. It's the perfect direction for long, fast reaches, and it's blowing probably about 10 to 15 miles per hour. So I've got to get the tire pressure up so we won't have too much resistance. The easier the vehicles roll, the faster we can go. So we're up to 40 PSI and we'll move to 60. I loved doing this as the program director, Blue Hill, talking about weather. There's a strong relationship between air pressure, which of course is what's going in this tire, and wind. Wind is the result of high pressure going to low pressure. And from an educational point of view, pumping up a tire is a great way to express that. The great thing about the wind, whether it's buggy kiting, traditional kiting, sailing, is the relationship that you have with it, that feeling of the wind. It's the air rushing through and filling your lungs and going by your body. Right now there's a nice gust that I can feel. It's saying, okay, time to get going and rig up the kite. I've got the kite overhead, and it's just sitting there. I'm hovering it, and I'll put my feet on the pegs for control, and then I'll bring it down into what we call the power zone, and it'll start pulling us along. Here we go. So we're not exactly zooming along, and that's what I like for my first time out, is to be moving, but be in control for safety. The sand hasn't dried out completely, so it's a bit soft, and that is creating a challenge for our traction. There is a pretty large amount of pull on my arm, and that is a good workout. In terms of this sport, it's just a great way to put that wonderful force of nature to exhilaration, to get the blood pumping, to use all the muscles and the brain, concentrate. I always tell people, don't spend money on an ATV, buy a kite buggy. You don't have to pay for gas, it doesn't pollute, and it's a lot more fun.
Wind buggy pilot Don McCaslin is program director at the Blue Hill Observatory in Milton, Massachusetts. We leave you with this thought. In the 19th century, American inventiveness, Yankee ingenuity, sparked the development of clipper ships to sail on the whispers and wails of the wind, giving our merchants the advantage of speed in world trade. In time, the sleek clippers yielded to bigger and heavier boats, powered first by coal and then by oil, ships which could move with more predictability and, some might say, less seamanship. But a clipper ship, provisioned with fresh water and food, could ride the wind almost forever and leave behind on the horizon only a graceful silhouette instead of a noxious smudge. And so that is a challenge for this age. Toxic and polluting sources of power are steadier, and kilowatt for kilowatt more powerful. But now the hope of engineers is to once again capture the free and inexhaustible supply of wind for today's human needs. So we too, if we dare, can go on gracefully and forever.